but he thinks he has found... not going to succeed. I'll get on the telephone if you've learned anything.
Up to the station break just when I was concluding my remarks. Don't tell me you've got faith. When you're not faithful with your time, you do not believe the principles behind tithing. The principle behind tithing is the root of all faith. Just as faith begins with the recognition God spoke and nothing became everything, the next step, everything is the Lord's. He's over all. You don't have the faith to recognize that He is all power, and he's in control of all things, you don't have a prayer against Satan's forces. If you were God, somebody didn't believe you were what you are, would you do anything for him? What's the matter with you? He gave his son for you. His son emptied himself of heaven's glory. That's why Paul said to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 8, you prove the genuineness of God's spirit in you. Don't anybody take any calls for the way you give. God gave his son. He, Christ, with the Father, of the same essence as the Father, King over all, emptied himself of heaven's glory, and as Paul said to these Corinthians, though rich, came poor for our sake, and gave himself. You claim to have the mind of Christ. Scripture says you have the spirit, you have the mind of Christ. You have the mind of Christ, and you are grabbing, holding, taker, not a giver. I get taken a few times, but I'd rather be a giver. You ever seen me since I've been here? Exhibit to you any personal financial need I've asked you to help me with? I've tried to make you do it God's way for your sake. Once I raised money for a house. Just once. 18 million came in place. Some of it's still coming in. I went and found the bargain of the century because of my personal contacts, a multi-million-dollar estate for $750,000. Millions of dollars worth of antiques and things in it. The 42,000. And then when I face myself, for no reason other than I wanted to, for God's sake, I brought up my church's name. They own that house. You know it's called Dodge Path. Like Samuel. I faithfully taught you the truth and refuse to let you get away with cheapening the gospel. For your sake. Either God's in control or he isn't. Doesn't matter whether people recognize that the earth is the Lord's. The way the world does things, they loan you money, you pay it all back, plus interest. God loans you what you have as a steward demands the tenth, because that's how you recognize he's the boss. And that's how you recognize he will keep his word and give evidence to it where the rubber meets the road, where it hurts. Not that kind of pseudo thing that has no risk to it. I recognize all I have comes from him. And he said, all he is claiming, the tithe and the first fruits, that he's claiming. You're a thief and a robber if you keep it. It's not yours to do with. And he told you where to put it. The storehouse where you get your spiritual meat. Wherever you're taught, and he makes it clear in Galatians 6 that it's where you're taught, let him that taught in the word share materially with the one who taught you in all good things. Storehouse where you get your food.
Mm-hmm.
This is the storehouse. Doesn't matter if we need it. We don't need it. Connor has a right to put it where he wants. Just because you have some surplus money in the bank, you don't need it. You can't take your paycheck and put it where you want to put it. Get off my boss. God's the boss. He could have created cows with an extra orifice to put money in. He said, that's where I want my money put. He wants you to make it a testament of the value of what you taught. It has nothing to do with my need. I don't need it. I suppose I put more than anybody, since every check comes to me and all of it goes into the church. Anybody in this room going to argue if I cash the check you send in Gene Scott's name? Anybody going to argue if I go to Las Vegas with it? It's about the worst thing I could think of doing. I don't think you'd argue for that Mustang Ranch. You don't want to have a higher taste than that. The point I'm making, I haven't. For God's sake, I know what he wants me to. But not because you want it. No, you're cotton picking business. Don't count on me while we're doing it either. You get presumptuous. You'll find out I'll do it. This is the place you get your food. And I think the quality of food here, at the very least, should be as expensive as God made it. The tithe is the Lord's. You can't believe that part of his word. You can't believe that he will keep his promise in that regard. Well, I tried, didn't he? Did. Well, you put him to test, didn't you? It wasn't an unqualified commitment. I'm going to fade to my die. You always feel the resistance when you get on money. That's why you don't have any faith. First century Christians gave it all. Sold everything they had and laid feet of the apostles. That was not God's plan. He wants the opportunity to bless what he told you you could keep permissively. You're a steward. You're a trustee. You ought to be dead. You were dead when he found you. He's good to you. The tie is mine, so fruits are mine. The rest, I want to bless. And because of that, then you move into voluntary sacrificial offerings. God hasn't planned those. That's where your love is really shown for you. And you're telling me you've got faith and can't put, number one, you don't believe God took care of you and deserves his testimony? Well, I can't agree. Well, I like to identify with the spirit of the Feast of the Tabernacles. It's considerably less than what they gave. But the fact that they gave 203 sacrifices in that time span. How better can you identify with the spirit of the Feast of the Tabernacles than given an offering of 203 units of your currency? Just give $203 to me, thanks. Some of you ought to give $203,000. You're sitting on it. It's the principle. I recognize God's going to teach the whole earth this, clear to the end of time. Yes. I'm starting a new year on God's calendar. I want to joyfully give an offering that testifies by the number itself, the universal language. I got the message. God took care of me this past year. I want his care the coming year. I want to say thank you. $23. I'm not paying for that. Right. Now you're saying it right. Oh, you have little faith, Jesus said. Oh, I'll be with you. You got nickel and dime faith. They're like the disciples who, when they're out in the desert, was wondering, how can we buy bread? We only have a few pennies. They were counting pennies. Jesus took one basket. You don't believe that either anymore. You believe the demons. Took one basket with a few loaves and fish. Came to those disciples and fed the 5,000, had many baskets left over. I don't believe that. Well, I know you. You're without faith. The Lord who can do that to a little boy's basket of loaves and fishes can't take care of you better than you can take care of you when you put him first. He said, you get the power to fight off the demons. You get the power for your life to be changed and seated in heavenly places when you're saving. Most of you haven't been saving for years. You've been doing what you could do. Not daring to believe God for the impossible. Get off of it. Still in the clutches of Satan. You're going to stay there. I don't have the faith to make a commitment on Sunday that I'll be at the cathedral last Sunday. No, you want to be biblical, say, Lord wills. If the Lord wills, leave you got the heart. You don't believe that God and his word and your calling and the opportunity that I talked about this morning is worth right now, today, not waiting until it's convenient and you've exercised all your other options that might be more attractive, and then you know you're going to do something else, so maybe you can wander down to the cathedral. You haven't got any faith. No wonder you're getting nowhere. I looked down this morning for 8 seats filled. That's my guess. I'm doing it every Sunday. Come on along. They come in their own cars usually. They're coming so regularly you can recognize their faces now most of the time. Do you have any idea what this church would be doing now? During the same time span when I went through the crises of my life, you had brought eight that are now almost as regular as you. You won't take your neck out. You won't take any risk. I wonder the devil knocks you around like a ping pong ball. Until faith rules your pocketbook, it'll have holes in it. No matter what you do. You can't trust God on money matters. You can't trust him on anything because there's nothing. Nothing on which we hinge our trust, our survival, everything, money. And you can't serve God and men if God, through you, does not rule your pocketbook that begins and ends with putting him first and starting with the tithe.
She didn't rule you at all.
You're listening.
You're a thief and a robber, and you know it. You can't give a tabernacle offering. Some of you that have leached off this minister for years can't start your giving, tabernacle offering. So you better worry about the devil. He's going to rule you. You have 9 minutes to get on the phone and do something about it.
Dr. Gene Scott's program, which is already in progress. www.drgenescott.com.
Apple Valley. Pastor, I know the truth of what you teach about giving. In December 1981, I have a struggle to get a tabernacle offering together. This year I've given, in most months, more than I was making gross in 1980. I've retired twice since then. My relatives, except my spouse and daughter, resent what I give, but scratch their heads at what I have. I read thousands of messages like that. They wake up. Get your giving straightened up. I've been teaching on the power of Satan. I've also been teaching on the greater power. It'll be in us. We're acting in faith. But you want faith action that doesn't hurt, or faith action that immediately helps you, like I'm sick and I want to believe God for healing. Or I'm broke and I want to believe God to provide. Of course, I'm not willing to do what the widow did, that Elijah came to, take a third of the last one I've got and put God first with it. You've got these warped traditional ideas of faith that God's some genie in a bottle, bellhop, a baggage carrier, nurse, an entertainer. Faith puts you at risk, risking the fact that the circumstances do not rule, God rules. He's tired of proving himself to you. He ain't on trial. You are. Most of you are flunking right now. Get on the telephone. Gene Scott's voice. Miracle 70 Minutes just about wiped me out and my voice for a week. I've got two more weeks of the Live in the Sun Festival. Bring a prayer for him. Your pastor, please. David is fleeing from Saul. And here's a man that could look in God's face and say, I was herding the sheep, faithful, and suddenly his life was changed because of the claim that God placed upon him. And in the 16th chapter of 1 Samuel, God's prophet Samuel anointed him to be king over all of God's people, Israel. That changed him. As we point out many times, the initiative in relationships with God always starts first with God. The jaw-breaking theological word for this is prevenient grace. God is the hunter. He is the seeker. And that's true not only in seeking and saving the lost initially, but in laying a claim upon a life. This is why we're to pray the Lord to send forth laborers into the field. Acts 13, as they ministered to the Lord and fasted, the Holy Ghost said, separate unto me Paul and Barnabas for the work whereunto I've called them. And once God takes the initiative with a life, you're never going to be the same again. When he taps you on the shoulder, there is no such thing as volunteers in the natural sense of the word. God gives you the right to respond, but you really don't have a choice. You can opt out your choice, but the only right way to go is to follow God, no matter what, once the call comes. And I believe every saint is in the ministry. If you belong to the Lord, and that's what the church is, the people that belong to him, then you become his body, and you ought to treat whatever you do as 100% commitment to God and that you're his. And in obeying God, sometimes we're prone to associate our circumstantial happenings with the will of God. As though once God calls us to anything and we make a commitment, he ought to reward us with ease and rosiness thereafter. I say that because don't tune in on David as just an example for preachers or what the world might separate as leaders in the will of God. David was a man after God's own heart, selected by God for a task. And he's an example for each of you and me, whatever we're doing for God. God called him. God upset his routines. God changed his life. God put the task on him. And then other things started going wrong. Not initially. He became a hero at first. You all know the story of David killing Goliath. That follows the chapter after his anointing. Then everything started going wrong. The ladies began to sing that David had killed his 10,000s, whereas Saul had killed but the thousands. Jealousy came into the heart of Saul, and a series of persecutions began. One after another, he had to dodge the javelin thrown by Saul. He had to hide in the wilderness. His wife had to put a bundle in bed to imitate that David was there while David escaped through a window. And all this was happening after he had been called of God and anointed. And it didn't stop with one. It just kept getting worse. Problem after problem began to multiply. Until you come to this 21st chapter of 1 Samuel. And King David to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest. And I want to give you the details of this chapter with a lot of time spent. I just want to race through it. David was so hungry and famished that in this case, he talked the priest into letting him eat of the showbread that was in the holy place, the hallowed bread. He was without weapons to fight with. But after killing Goliath, the trial of Goliath had been taken to this place and from behind the ephod, he is able to talk the priest out of the sword of Goliath. And I want you, if you're facing any problems today, to tune in on the man after God's own heart and the anointed of God, that after persecution on top of persecution, instead of seeing natural and circumstantial victories accumulate, he's hunted, he's famished, he's oppressed. He has to beg the bread out of the house of God from the priest to eat it and the sword of Goliath. And then David arose and fled in the 10th verse that day for fear. I'm glad the Bible's honest. Aren't you? That a man after God's own heart can flee for fear. Anybody ever been scared? We're treading on some super spiritual nerves as we debunk periodically the Superman myth that some men of God cloak themselves in by behavior or verbal statements. We are constantly faced with the feeling that if you're a leader, you never communicate any craps in this crack of clay. Because mankind wants a God they can touch and feel and see and worship. Well, there's only one like that. It has no cracks in the pot, and that's Jesus. And I take great comfort in seeing that a man after God's own heart arose and fled that day for fear of Saul, and went to Achish, the king of Gath. Gath is down in the middle of the Philistine country. If you would draw a triangle and put Hebron on one side of the base and Gaza, which is on the edge of the desert, on the other side of the base near the Mediterranean coast, and put the point of the top of the triangle evenly balanced, you'd be right where Gath is. About halfway between Gaza and Jerusalem, in the middle of the Philistine country. Here's a man that had killed Goliath, the champion, had been really deceitfully given a wife by Saul, because Saul, who didn't want to kill David himself, made as the price of marrying his daughter that he killed so many Philistines, and he was sure that David would get killed in the process, but David wasn't. You read in the chapters immediately preceding, everywhere you put David, he conducted himself wisely, it says. Over and over that phrase comes out. He conducted himself wisely. Everything he did was good and right. He didn't deserve anything that was happening to him. And he might have complained all the time to God, because God had upset his life and had anointed him king, and that's what had upset Saul, because he was the successor. He fled. Now he's surrounded by Philistines. And the servants of Achish said unto him, is not this David, the king of the land? Did they not sing one to another of him in dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s? And David laid up these words in his heart.
Look, flashing blood on him.
He is in Philistine country. I can see him there in a cloak big enough to hide this giant sword of Goliath and trying to move through the ranks of Goliath. He's recognized and he hears everybody telling this news. Is this not David, the king of the land? And David laid up these words in his heart and was so afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. And he changed his behavior before them and feigned himself mad in their hands. And Scrabble. And you Scrabble players, this is old English for made marks. He made marks on the doors of the gates. He just write nonsense syllables on the doors of the gates. Now, the way I make up words when I preach, you Scrabble fans, watch out when you play with me. I just make them up. And that's what David was doing. He was scrabbling, making marks on the doors of the gate. And let his spittle fall down upon his beard. Can you see the man anointed that had had the oil flow down over his head and onto his beard now? Play acting, feigning madness, spittle dribbling down upon his beard. Then said Achish unto his servants, lo, ye see the man is mad. Wherefore then have ye brought him to me? Have I need of madmen that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? And David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave of Adullam. Subsequent, there comes to him a band of men in need and in distress and in debt, and the nuclei that will become his mighty men will assemble in subsequent chapters. But in this escape from Achish, hiding in the woods and in the hills in the heart of Philistine country, so afraid, escaping from Achish's presence by feigning madness, and now hiding in fear, he writes Psalm 56. That's the message of the morning. Any of you any worse off? Anybody here in worse condition than David? You are. I probably haven't got too much in this message for you, though I'm sure the message would be the same to a worse condition. But if you have ever felt that God let you down after calling you, or if you've ever entertained the thought that your service of God deserves better treatment than you're receiving, if you, after giving your life to God, have found circumstances closing in, and if that's your condition today, and if you have even been, as David, guilty of relying upon fleshly methods to try to deliver, and the best you can do is just escape the pressure of the moment, and you're still dwelling in fear. And if you're here today, under pressure, in fear, disappointed at all in the natural with the way God's treating you, and I'm not interested in preaching a sermon unless it happens.